Hello and welcome. This is Adventures in Visibility, and I am your host and guide to better visibility on the web, Denise Wakeman, and today we have an adventure in SEO with my good friend and longtime colleague, Rich Brooks.
Now, well, don't make it sound like we're so old.
Okay, I said long time. I didn't say my old friend.
That's true. I'm sorry. Go on.
That's all right. Now you get the sense of what's going to be happening on this call. We've known each other a long time on this hangout, I should say. It's not a call. We've known each other a long time, and you know, Rich always makes me laugh, and he's also one of the smartest people I know. So I'm really excited that he's agreed to be on this hangout, because I really had to convince him that Google Plus was a place where you could actually, you know, do something here. So I won't give you too hard of a time about that, Rich, but anyway. You can get updates and notifications about upcoming guests by subscribing at adventuresinvisibility.com, and feel free to tweet about the show using the hashtag adventuresinvisibility, and if I see it, I can give you a shout out. So that's the admin for the show. Okay, so we're having a conversation about SEO, and I'm going to give you a brief bio introduction of Rich. I'm going to read it so I don't miss anything, because I don't like memorizing things, but I want you to get all the gist of what's going on with Rich. So, Rich Brooks is founder and president of Flight New Media, a web design and marketing firm in Portland, Maine. He is a nationally recognized speaker, very good speaker. I've had the pleasure to share the stage with him a few times, and I'm always awed by him. He is a speaker on entrepreneurship, internet marketing, and social media. Rich is currently an expert blogger at FastCompany.com and a regular contributor at Social Media Examiner. Rich is the founder of the Agents of Change Digital Marketing Conference, an annual conference on search, social, and mobile marketing, I should say. And he runs the Marketing Agents podcast, where he interviews marketing experts from around the world on search, social, and mobile marketing. So, welcome, Rich. I'm glad you're here with me today.
Thanks for the invite, Denise. I appreciate it.
You kind of threw me off there when you know, we're not old. We're not old.
We're not old.
Well, okay.
Even though I have to wear glasses now to read anything. Even though my hair is falling out and turning gray. We're not old.
No. You're just a young whippersnapper. Okay. So I wanted to have you on here today to talk about SEO, search engine optimization, and visibility, and then how that can help with conversion on your website, because this is something that you talk about a lot, you write about a lot, I've heard you speak about a lot.
Yes.
So I figured you're the right person to have the conversation with. But the first thing I want to ask you is that, or kind of get a feel for, is that I've been reading a lot about how SEO is changing so much, and that maybe it's irrelevant now. You know, maybe it's the same argument as blogging is dead and that kind of thing. But I'd like to just get a sense from you about how you're thinking about SEO these days, and how it relates to search marketing, and you know, kind of where you stand on that issue.
Sure. Well, I think that people say things like SEO is dead or blogging is dead because they've run out of things to say, and they're trying to be controversial. And it's not like I haven't done similar things for different things in the past. So I'm not blaming those people, but I think that's ridiculous. And when I look at my own traffic reports, and of course we have a lot of clients, so I also look at their traffic reports, and I'm seeing that a lot of their search volume is, or a lot of their traffic is coming from search. I'm seeing sometimes 60, 70, even 80% of their traffic to their website, especially first-time visitors, is through search engine optimization. So to ignore search is like ignoring two-thirds of your potential customer base. To me, that just doesn't make any sense. And although, yes, social is very sexy, and I get that, and all anybody wants me to talk about anymore is social media, the bottom line is if I am starting something new and I want to increase my visibility, especially over time, that one of the best ROIs, I think, is in search. Because as much as I love social media, there's a few problems with that. I've heard you say something along these lines that, you know, your blog, which is similar to your website, your blog is your home for your intellectual property. And when you work on Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, you're working in somebody else's land. You're basically building your house on somebody else's land, and that land could be taken away from you, or that land could be completely devalued, and thus there's no point in staying there. So when you're doing SEO, you're really planning for the future of your own business because you are taking stock and creating more value for what you already own. And so I think that's a key thing for people to take away. Yeah, social can definitely drive traffic to your website, and I think that's an important part of the equation. But definitely don't think that SEO is something that is past. Every one of us Googles every day, or we use Siri, or whatever we do. We're constantly searching. So if somebody is searching for an answer, why wouldn't you want to be the top result for that answer? So that's my take on it. I think it's still super important.
Yeah, well, and I agree with you on that. And, you know, but I think that people hear all this stuff about Google pandas and penguins and that sort of thing, and they get all freaked out about it. And, you know, I'll be honest, I don't focus on it that much. You know, I do my best to optimize my blog posts and that sort of thing, but I don't pay too much attention to all the other, you know, hoopla going on around it. And so I'm just wondering that if how all these, like how the Google, the Googleverse has been affecting SEO, you know, with all these updates that have gone on over the last year or two.
Well, I think that when we talk about Google, many of us think of it as that is everything, that search. And while that's not true, it obviously is the 800-pound gorilla. And when Google makes changes, even if Bing doesn't, it does affect most of our search. And I know when I look at our traffic, Google is crushing everybody else in terms of sending search traffic our way. It's not even close. So we do pay attention to it. At the same time, I try not to get too lost in the weeds. I think that there's certain evergreen tactics that should always work, have always worked. And that's really what we're talking about. Yeah, there's Panda and there's Penguin and there's always going to be tweaks and changes and all these sort of things. But for most of us, if we're creating valuable content and we're using the words that our audience is using and we're putting them in the right place, and then we're also making sure that other people are linking to that content in a natural way, I think we're going to be okay. Like, that's probably about 80% of it. And then the rest of it is if you're in a very competitive marketplace if there are certain types of industries that might be more affected, like if you're creating directories or certain types of niches that might have to pay more attention. But for the average business owner or solopreneur, I think you only need to know about the basics and make sure you're doing them right to really own this. And then use tools like blogging and YouTube to really supplement everything else. You know, so I always say websites probably got too big. And your website, when you next update it, probably could go a lot smaller than it is right now. But what you want to do is take some of that content and turn it into blog posts so you have that ongoing conversation. You keep your website simple, but you're just creating new content that's valuable to the search engines either by putting it out in a blog or putting it up to a YouTube video. And that's the way that you're really going to help your search engine visibility.
I like that you mentioned YouTube. You know, that's one of the reasons that I'm so enamored with Hangouts, for example, is that, you know, I can have a conversation here with you and create a piece of content that is so easy to spread across the web. You know, it's on Google and visible, on Google Plus and visible. It's on YouTube automatically. And the information I put into the event with keywords, because I talk about what the content is going to be, you know, gets indexed, and then I can embed it on my blog, and, you know, it's a beautiful thing, and I've done one piece of content, so
right.
I love that YouTube is, you know, an equal part of that equation. So you talked about the keywords, or using the words that your customers or your ideal client is looking for, so why don't we get into a little nitty-gritty,
and,
because I know you write about this a lot, is about how do you discover what the right keywords are for your audience, for the audience you want to attract, because I think that's where people get lost. They think it's going to be hard and complicated, and, you know, maybe it doesn't need to be.
And it can be hard and complicated for sure, but there are some easy things that anybody can do. So, for example, you know, I often talk about a three-step process. Brainstorm your keyword phrases is number one. Number two is basically test your beliefs. And the third one is rewrite your copy, or in the case of blogs or YouTube, is create new copy based around those keywords. So just to kind of break it down, the first thing is brainstorming. And so what I often discuss is that I have five perspectives that I use. And this could be you do it by yourself, you could do it with a coworker, you could do it with some trusted customers, however you want to work it. But the five perspectives that I use, or the five lenses, are these. One is, what is the product or service that you're bringing to market? And that's an easy one. We all know that if we're a dentist in Texas, we want to be found for, like, Dallas Dentist or whatever it might be. And so you start writing down all those keyword phrases for what you actually bring to market. And using the dentist example, it also may be things like dental veneers or teeth straightening or orthodontists, whatever it may be, whiter smile. Then you get into the second one is, what are the problems for your ideal customer? What are they dealing with? And that's, when we think about it, we often search what our problems are. So start thinking about, what is it exactly that I have helped my ideal customer in the past overcome? So I start brainstorming some keywords around that. Then the third lens is flip that on its head. So we've talked about problems, but a lot of times people aren't searching for problems, they're searching for solutions. So then I start brainstorming, what are the real or perceived benefits somebody gets from working with me? So I come up with those as well. So I'm writing all these down. The fourth one is features. So if you've ever taken a sales course, you know, you never sell on features, you always sell on benefits. But with the internet, it's a little bit different, because very often when people start searching for specific features, it means they're ready to make a buying decision, and of course we want to be in front of those people. Now, features isn't, none of these are perfect for all businesses. So you may find that one is really easy for you to create ones with, and other ones you're like, well, I don't know what my features are. Don't worry about it. The fifth one is competition. Now, when I say competition, a lot of times people think, well, I've got a burger joint, so you must be talking about McDonald's or Burger King. But really what I'm talking about is, as we bring things to market, we're solving people's problems. But chances are, that's not the only way that people are solving those problems. So, for example, you know, somebody might say, well, I've got a gym. Why do people go to gym? Well, they want to lose weight. Okay, fine. But it's not the only way they could lose weight. They could go on the Atkins diet. They could take diet pills. They could buy the Thighmaster, whatever it is. So what I want to do is come up with those keyword phrases that are my competition, and then I'm going to create some content. So I might write why diet pills are not a healthy alternative to a gym membership, or why the Atkins diet won't get you into your bridesmaid dress in time, or why the Thighmaster actually makes your butt look bigger. So I'm going to create content that's going to attract my ideal customer, but then I'm going to convince them that I've got a better solution for them. So those are the five perspectives. You get this good list of brainstorming phrases, and you're not ready yet. So the next step is what I call the testing phase. And there's something out there called the curse of knowledge. And I first heard about it in the book. I think it was called it was one of the Heath Brother books, one of the first two.
Oh,
so,
right.
And Made to Stick, I think it was. And the issue here is the curse of knowledge is that somebody with a high amount of information or knowledge about a certain topic can't understand the problems of somebody with less information. In other words, we often forget that we know a lot more than our customers. So we really need to test these. So I use, the number one tool we use is the Keyword Planner, which is a free program from Google. It's part of the Google AdWords campaign, so you need to get a Google AdWords account, but that's free. Using it will cost money. Actually taking out ads will cost money, but using the tool itself is free. So I go into Keyword Planner and I start putting in I skipped a small step where I start to categorize some of my phrases from those five categories into different categories that I'm going to talk about on my website. So, for example, we're a web design and internet marketing company, so I might go with email marketing as one category, SEO is another category, web design, logo design, whatever it is that we do. So I'm organizing all these. Then I take one of those categories of phrases and I put it into the Keyword Planner. And what Google shares with me is what the search, well, not just for these words, but related phrases that I may not have come up with. What's the search volume and how much competition do I have? Admittedly, that competition is for pay-per-click, but there's a lot of overlap. So based on this, I can start to see, like, oh, I was going to optimize my website for, say, email marketing, but it turns out everybody's talking about list building. Okay, well, then I'm going to talk about list building because that's what my audience knows. And I actually had this interesting thing happen to me. It was last year. I was doing some research for a hair restoration company. And they were talking about, I know, I get some crazy clients, right? They were talking about hair restoration and hair replacement. So I was curious to know which one would perform better. So another tool I use is something called Google Trends. And it's a similar tool, but it gives me information over time, and it lets me compare different keyword phrases. So I put those two in, and it turns out that hair replacement outperforms hair restoration by a little bit. But what was concerning to me is that I looked at it over time, the overall search volume was going down. So even though that's what they talk about, what I decided to do is I threw in two more terms, hair loss and alopecia, which is a condition that women sometimes suffer from, which causes early hair loss. So I put those two terms in, and you get a graph of, like, over time, and oh my God, it just crushed. It was like the most visible example ever. Because what turns out, in hindsight being 2020, is when people start losing their hair, that's all they're thinking about. They're not thinking about how to fix it. They know they want to fix it. They want their hair to stop falling out. But what they're thinking about is hair loss. So that crushed all the other search terms. Now, that's not to say that I wouldn't use hair restoration and hair replacement in that same blog post or article, and not to say that I wouldn't also create articles for people who are already further along the sales funnel, but I know that my lowest hanging fruit is hair loss and, to a lesser degree, alopecia. So you have to know what your audience is looking for and then create that sort of content. So that's kind of how we do that sort of stuff, and then we create the content around it.
I love it. You just gave, you know, a crash course in how to find keywords. That was fantastic, fantastic. And I'm going to bring in a question here because it relates specifically from Sid Rust. She asks, Rich, with blogging changing so much over the last 10 years, would you suggest removing older posts to keep the content newer? Obviously, the keyword usage wasn't back in place so much then.
Well, I would say that even though search has evolved, I'd say we still were using keywords back in the day, maybe not as effectively or in ways that weren't. I would never take down an old post. I mean, that's the short answer. Because the bottom line is, it's built up authority. People may be linking to it. And this is something you should always do. Go into your Google Analytics. And I know everything seems to be Google, but they've got some great tools out there. For example, we recently went from... we had two different websites. We had flight.biz as our website and takeflight.com as our blog. No, I'm sorry, I screwed that up again. Flight.biz is our website. Flightblog.com is our blog. And I was having trouble with email delivery on the .biz, so I bought a new domain called takeflight.com, which you see down here in my bottom third, and merged everything together. And I wanted to get rid of as many pages as possible. And I had a page on all my different speaking gig topics. And I'm like, no one must ever go to these. I don't see any traffic there. I assume there's no traffic there. I'm going to get rid of all of them. But just before I cut them all off, I took a look at my analytics, and it turned out they were attracting a lot of search traffic. So this is what you should do. I mean, if you have a blog post and you think it's just taking up space, first of all, there's zero space it's taking up, so I wouldn't worry about it. But you may be surprised that it's actually getting more traffic. Now, I recently wrote a blog post about how to breathe new life into old posts, and you might want to check that out on my blog. But one of the things I say is, when you're creating new content around the same topics, link back to the original post. That'll increase the search engine visibility. That'll also drive some traffic there. And you might also want to go back to some of those old blog posts and update the images and create some more pinnable images, mm-hmm. because Pinterest is a very good sharing tool. And so that's one of the things that I've started doing as well. So definitely don't get rid of them. But, you know, here's one thing that I mentioned in the article, too. If you have a blog post that you think was good but for whatever reason isn't getting a whole lot of traffic, consider doing a keyword analysis on that blog post and changing the title and maybe the opening paragraph, and then using something like Twitter or Google+ to promote some of those old blog posts. So that would be my solution.
Excellent, excellent. So I just need to give a shout out here to my pal, Mia Voss. She took note that you were cracking me up with the Thighmaster comments. So yes, absolutely. So Mia Voss is in the house, and as famously says, get your learn on. Hashtag get your learn on. So thanks, Mia. All right, so let's go back here. Let's move on now, because I think that you really covered that one so well. And let's talk about backlinks, because you mentioned getting people to link to you, and we do have a question about that from Leela Martin. And she wanted to know, backlinks are still important, so what is the best legal way to get quality backlinks to your site? How do you use Hangouts as backlinks to our site? And are they heavy-duty links?
All right, well, let's take this step by step. Keep that up, because I'll forget this stuff. So backlinks are important. What I generally say is, if you've got no incoming or very few incoming links to your website or blog, I'll use the term website, but I mean both, then one of the easiest things you can do is start to increase that. So you can use a tool like Moz has a tool, M-O-Z. If you search for Moz link tool, I forget the exact URL of it right now, you'll find it. It will tell you how many people are linking to your site. If you find that there's like 50 or less links to your site, that's a great opportunity. That's a low-hanging fruit. I would make it a priority. If you go in there and you see that there's hundreds of people who are already linking to your website, I don't know that a lot more links is going to make a huge difference, so I wouldn't worry too much about it. Now, so let's say that you decide, yeah, I do think that I don't have enough incoming links. I want to get some more links. The number one thing that I would recommend doing is blogging. And the reason is because I just anecdotally feel that people are more likely to link to your blog post than they are to your website. Website tends to be a little bit more salesy. You're trying to close the sale. The blog is more about educating, informing, entertaining people. More people are likely to link to a business blog. That's just been my experience. So create valuable content. That's certainly one thing. There are a number of tricks to get incoming links. Things like creating how-to blog posts, creating list posts. Let's say that you are a dog trainer. Go find 10 dog trainer blogs, or 9 actually. Write up the 10 best dog trainer blogs blog post. Make sure you're one of them. And then after it goes live and you've linked to all of them, let them know. Say, hey, you know, I thought you were one of the best blogs. I've created this blog post for you that features you, rather. Let me know if I got anything wrong. Most of them will come back to the blog and check it out, and a number of them will create links from there, either social media stuff or their own blog, saying, we were one of the top blogs of 2014 in this particular industry. And just a pro tip here, if you are doing that and there's some really influential people in your industry, have it a mix of those really influential people who will probably never even take a look at your blog, and some up-and-comers as well who are much more likely to really promote it heavily, because the other day, I was included in the list with Seth Godin. Okay, hello, that's pretty awesome for me. Seth Godin could give a crap, okay? So but I'm going to go out and I'm going to say, look at what if Seth Godin and Rich Brooks have in common, you know? So I'm going to promote as much as I can. So having a mix like that might also get people excited about sharing your content. And it could be sharing, it could be linking as well. And also guest blogging, still, I know what Matt Cutt says, but the bottom line is creating quality guest blog posts, in other words, posts at other people's blogs that link back to your own content, still going to be valuable. There are certain blogs that's going to be more valuable than compared to other blogs, but it's still a great way of getting those inbound links. Personally, I hate calling up people or sending emails that says, hey, I think you've got some really great content on your website, and I think your audience would also like some of the content on mine. Would you like to link back? I've never responded to any of those, and I can't imagine anybody else does either.
No way. No way. Okay, so you mentioned sharing links, so sharing with social media. Do those links on Twitter and Google Plus and Facebook and LinkedIn, do those count as backlinks to your
blog? They don't count in the same way as you would find on a website or blog that's built up more trust, because I believe it's just too easy. And again, I am not Matt Cutts, and we're reaching the end of my expertise of what the exact value is, but there is evidence, and Google and Bing have basically admitted that they are looking at social cues in terms of search engine visibility. So it is part of the algorithm. The other thing is, most of us are logged into Google when we're doing a search. And we all see those results on the right-hand column that say, you may not notice it, but it'll say something along those lines, only you are seeing this result because you are connected to this person. And when we have our Google, when we see a lot of those, the faces, the authorship faces, that's a lot of times tied into Google Plus and tied into other social cues that are out there. So I think social plays a role in SEO. I think the two are linked. Obviously, getting a link from a popular website or blog is going to carry more weight than just getting a tweet from somebody, but both are valuable. But from a search engine standpoint, getting a link from an established web page is going to be more valuable than getting a tweet or a Facebook update.
Okay, excellent. So how would you say that, you know, spending the time to come up with your keywords and making sure that there's good backlinks coming in, you know, focusing on that in some way, how does that impact the visibility of your site or your blog? I mean, does it? In what way? And in what way?
Well, sure. I mean, obviously, when people are doing searches, you are more likely to come up. And also, when people are reading a blog, you know, when I look at my, every once in a while, Kissmetrics links to one of our articles. And whenever they do, even when we're buried in like a list of 50 resources, we get like 750 visitors that month from Kissmetrics, and it's just awesome. So you will get traffic and thus visibility. Once they get to your website, it's up to you to actually make a deeper connection with them. And so that's really where we start talking about conversions and building your email list and all these sorts of things, because you cannot rely on people to continually find you time and time again when it comes to the internet.
Okay.
You need to actually get in touch with them.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought up conversion, because, of course, that is the way you maintain that connection and the visibility, because a one-time visitor isn't really that useful to you. Most people won't take action the first time that they meet you. So how do you encourage conversion once you've built that visibility and attracted that traffic?
There's a lot of different factors that go into building enough trust where somebody's going to give you their email address or fill out a contact form. And probably longer than we could really go into, but just in terms of some of the highlights here is, and I'm biased because I run a web design shop, but here goes. If your website looks like it was put together by your nephew or your brother-in-law, chances are you're not getting all the business you could. If it looks shoddy, people are going to question whether or not you're a legitimate business or not. And it doesn't take a lot to get a good-looking website these days, but how professional you look is definitely going to build trust immediately. If you don't, you're not going to. Then there's a lot of different things about just making the page as quiet as you can. What are you trying to accomplish with this site? So we actually, when I redesigned our website, we really quieted down the page, almost more so than I wanted to, but I really wanted to experiment a little bit and see would our conversions go up. And we're not getting as much traffic as we did because we changed domain names, so it's too early to tell, but we're still getting a lot of good leads coming in through our site, so it tells me we're doing something right here.
So what do you mean by quiet the site down or quiet the page down?
Yeah, so I'm talking about increasing white space, and just to be completely clear, white space does not need to be white. If you go to our website, takeflight.com, you'll see that there's a giant image up top, a little bit of navigation, and then there's three different like kind of catchphrases that float on through. You have to scroll down really to see any of the content at all, which is like a little bit crazy for me to do, but I wanted to try something different. And like I said, it hasn't hurt our conversion rates at all. So that's what I mean. Just like, don't try and put 1,000 things on the page. Even if it's a blog, I know that a lot of people, it's like, well, I've got this coming up and this coming up and I want to promote this and I was on this TV show and that. I get it. And there's probably a place for that on your website. But if it's not serving the purpose of your site, get rid of it. Honestly, I know that that's difficult. You know, we want to let everybody know everything we do, but that's not the way to get business. It's much better to have less offerings, actually, and make it easier. And you've probably, I'm sure, Denise, you've heard this story before, what's often referred to as the jam study, where they went to a high-end grocer, and they set up one of those tasting stations, right? And in the tasting station, they have 6 flavors of jam, and people come up and they taste them, and a certain percentage of people go in and they buy it. So the next day, what they do is they put in 24 flavors of jam. They get a lot more people because there's a much bigger amount of jam, and people, certain percentage of people buy the jam, walk out. What they found amazingly is the jam sales actually went down on day 2 because people were overwhelmed by the amount of choice they had.
Right.
And it's jam. There's no wrong answer with jam, right? But people were freaking out like, oh my God, what kind of jam should I buy? So imagine that with your website, especially if you have something like me that could cost thousands or even tens of thousands of dollars. If I'm overwhelming people with information, they're just going to go, whoa, and back up. I want to quietly get them to say a series of small yeses. And those yeses mean clicking on a link, trying out a calculator, not for me, but for other people, mm-hmm. signing up for an email newsletter, downloading a white paper, anything to get them involved. Selling is not telling is one of those old sales saws that continues to be true. So you want to get people involved with your website and then try and get them, depending on what you have to sell, to get them to join your email list, because email list is really the most important thing in my opinion. More important than social, more important than search. It's about building that list. I mean, they all work together, but I use search engine optimization and social media to build my list and to drive traffic to my website for other conversions.
Absolutely. So I just want to bring this in. Esther Okamura says, Rich Brooks, good common sense, feet on the ground info, making notes like crazy.
Awesome.
I agree. You are delivering here. This is like a class almost.
Excellent. I'm glad I can provide some value here.
Yeah, tons of value. So, a lot of people, you talked a little bit about how to, I guess I should take this off so that people can actually see me, but a lot of people, you talked about, how to find your keywords. How do you recommend, if somebody's listening to you now going, okay, this all sounds really good, what do you tell them on how to start? What's the first step to take?
Well, specifically with keywords, so you want to take your best.
This whole thing, getting kind of using SEO to build their visibility.
All right, so on your website, once you've figured out where or what the right keywords are, and you've already put them into these silos, which are basically those categories that I talked about, like for me it might be SEO, email marketing, blogging, so on and so forth, what you're going to do next is you're going to take your best keywords and make sure that they go into the titles. That's the number one thing. The title of the page is the thing that's way up top. Often if you're on a Mac, it's where the red, yellow, green buttons are. If you're on a PC, it's where the minimize, maximize, and close buttons are. Make sure your keywords go in the first two or three words, and then you can often rephrase it afterwards. So that's what I do. Every page gets a unique title. Every page, the title is very specific to that content. So I make sure that I have really narrow the focus of a given page. And so it goes into the title, it goes into the header on the page, it usually goes into the first sentence or two on the page, and then I might use it two or three times throughout the page as well, as long as it doesn't sound unnatural. And I've definitely seen sites that are like, have you ever thought of getting a vacation spot in Portland, Maine? Because Portland, Maine is the vacation capital of the world. If your vacation plans include Portland, Maine, it's like nobody talks like that. So don't write like that. So try and make it work as naturally as possible. And then also linking from one page to another page, don't use things like click here or learn more. Always use your keywords in those links. It helps on a number of different levels. Our eyes focus on words that are different, so the words that are blue and underlined or red and underlined or however you do your links, our eyes are going to be drawn to that, but also the search engines are paying attention to the words in the link to give them a clue about what's on the next page. So that's how I do it for each web page, and then also when I'm writing a blog post, I follow that same methodology. I make sure it goes into my title, my header, first sentence, a couple other times throughout the page, and then I use a plugin on WordPress, like I'm currently using Yoast SEO plugin. And that helps me also even do some testing for SEO, like have I optimized this blog post in the best way possible. And the same is similar with YouTube. The only difference is when I create a video, I first name the file based on my keyword. So let's say, getting back to hair loss, we do a video about hair loss. We name the video hairloss.mov. We upload it to YouTube, and while it's uploading, we create a title, Hair Loss, What You Need to Know Now, or whatever it might be. Or hair loss, colon, does hair restoration really work? Whatever we want to talk about. And then I make sure that I say it in the narrative, because YouTube transcribes all these things, so I want to make sure I'm saying my keyword. And then I put it in the description, and I put it in the tags as well. And there's a few other tricks as well. But, again, getting those keywords into the right place is critical to your search engine visibility and thus all your online visibility as well.
Excellent, excellent. I love it. I love it. And you know what you said at the very outset about using evergreen tactics for SEO and not getting too crazy about every single animal change, the Google right. Zoo, as I heard somebody refer to it the other day. These are evergreen tactics. I mean, I've been hearing these tactics since I've been blogging, basically, and they still work. They're the ones that you just don't worry about all the other stuff. Do what works, and that's what you just outlined exactly.
Yeah. And I believe 80 to 90% of it doesn't change. The 10% that does change, for some of us, is going to make an impact. For most of us, I don't find that it really does make that much of an impact. Mm-hmm. And I think if you just continually create content that's valuable to your end user, use Google AdWords, the Keyword Planner, and SEO as market research. So you make sure that you're using the words that your customers use. But 90% of good SEO is just understanding your customer and creating content that helps them solve their problems.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, we're a little past my intended end time, as I told you probably would happen. Anyway, because this show is called Adventures in Visibility, and we've talked a lot about the adventure of SEO today for better visibility, I would like to ask a more personal question, if that's okay with you.
Of course.
And find out from you what is your most memorable adventure? So whether it's in business or life or travel or whatever, what was your most memorable adventure?
Well, I've got two answers to this because one hasn't happened yet, and you and I briefly talked about it before. If you check, for some reason, I'm the zombie guy, and a lot of people, like just as a joke, in my Twitter handle years ago, without having anything to say, I said, I enjoy killing zombies and long walks on the beach. And it just became this thing that people started to talk to me about zombies, and then it became like, so I started paying more attention. So anyways, this coming Tuesday, if the weather is good, I will be a zombie in an upcoming zombie film called Night of the Living Deb. Probably not coming to theaters near you, but I'm sure it will be online at some point in the near future. So that is an adventure that I'm totally looking forward to. But I would say, like, the adventure that I most enjoy is really the adventure of running my own business. I have to say, it is an adventure, and it is a constant challenge, and it's got its ups, and it's got its downs. But at the end of the day, the idea that I get to create something and employ people and help small businesses grow, that's an amazing adventure. And it may not be climbing the Himalayas or going on a bike tour through Amsterdam or anything like that, but just it really has been a very rewarding 17 years now, and I guess that would be currently my greatest adventure.
You know what? I couldn't agree with you more. I think running a business is an adventure, and again, that's part of why I decided to call this whole series Adventures in Visibility, because I think that every day that we are creating for clients and with clients and creating opportunities for people and ourselves and our families, I mean, it's all about adventure in my book, and it's a big experiment, and if you just embrace it, it's a whole lot of fun too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's through our adventure in blogging that we met a decade ago, or seems like, at least around that long ago. Yeah. And, we've had so many opportunities to, create in person and virtually and present and party and, attend conferences. And that's just, it wouldn't have happened without the adventure of the internet.
There you go.
So, that's how I look at it, too. So, Rich, I am so grateful that you agreed to be on this adventure with me today, and I thank you for your time. You just, this was amazing what you delivered here today. This is a course in SEO, and I'm going to be encouraging people to watch it again.
Excellent.
Lots of people are saying that they've been taking notes and how clear and articulate and best explanation of SEO concepts.
Oh, well, thank you.
Coming back to review, so you hit it out of the park, as I knew you would.
Excellent.
So, what's the best place for people to find you before I let you go?
Sure. So for my website, it's takeflyte.com, FLYTE.com. But I did want to just mention that we have an annual conference that we put on called the Agents of Change Digital Marketing Conference. This is an in-person event in Portland, Maine. If you've ever, I know a lot of people say, oh, I love Maine. I've always wanted to go, or I used to go to camp there. Now you can go and write the entire thing off as a business trip. The website is agentsofchangecon.com. I'm sure it'll be in the show notes or whatever you call them on Google+. But the bottom line is it's an amazing event, both in person and we have a live stream. So if you can't make it to Maine, you can watch it on your computer. We've got some early bird specials going on right now. Just go to the site and check out last year's sizzle reel, because for no other reason than our first presenter swallowed a 26-inch sword. I can't promise that's going to happen 2 years in a row, but just to give you a sense of what you can expect at the Agents of Change Digital Marketing Conference this year, it should give you a taste.
Wow. Thank you for bringing that, because I totally forgot to. So I
totally
apologize.
Cool.
Somebody swallowed a sword?
Roderick Russell. You've got to watch it. It's a 2-minute video, totally worth your time. Go check it out.
Okay, I'll link to that video in the show notes too, because I gotta see that. Okay, so thank you, Rich, for being here with me today. I appreciate you, and I'm so grateful that we're friends. I'm just so grateful.
Me too. It's great seeing you again, Denise.
Yes, it's nice to connect. For you out there in HOA land, you can go to adventuresinvisibility.com and sign up to get advance notice, and also notice when everything's posted on my blog. I always provide show notes. I provide timestamp of the video. You'll get the downloadable audio, because I provide that as well in case you want to listen to it on your MP3. And what else? I do a transcript too. So. Get on the email list, and you'll get notice of when all of that's ready, because it does take a little time. Thank you for being with me here today. And the next, what is my next one? Oh, it's on June 26th. The next adventure is with Dino Dogan, who is the founder of Triber. And I got to meet him in person at a Blog Paws Pet blogging conference in Vegas a few weeks ago, and he is a trip. I love him. He is got so much energy, you won't believe it. So I really hope that you'll be able to make it. And the 26th also happens to be my birthday, so it's going to be a happy birthday hangout. So anyway, thank you for being here with me today, and we'll see you next time. Have an adventurous day.